going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Mean Streets, powered by FTN. I'm your host, Chris Meany, here to talk some Thanksgiving football. I got two studs from FTN, as you see there on the screen. Kyle Murray, give him a follow on Twitter. KMurrDFS, he's our lead DFS analyst over at FTN. We have David Jones, Tenacious D. Jones. What jersey are you rocking there, David? What are you rocking?
You know what I'm rocking? It's that Will Fuller jersey.
Will Fuller jersey. Okay.
It's the Will Fuller jersey, I'm sorry, that Javi Prolezzo bought for me at the beginning of the season because he lost the bet.
How many side bets do you have on the go with these beautiful FTN minds?
I've only had a few. I only take them if I'm really confident or I think Javi's got a really bad take. So those are the ones I take.
Maybe we can get one on the go here today. So, guys, three games to break down. We have the Texans and the Lions. Houston, three-point favorites, 51 points. That's the total. That's the first game on Thanksgiving. Washington and Dallas. The winner is going to take the lead in the NFC East, and the winner will have four wins on the season. We have Dallas favored by 3 points, 46.5, and then Baltimore really just getting a ton of bad news over the past few days. Heading into Pittsburgh, trying to give the Steelers their first loss of the season. Pittsburgh, 5-point favorites, 45. Before we get into some games, I know it is American Thanksgiving, and of course, I am the Canadian here. So, Kyle, any rituals, like this day that comes around every year, like do you try to get with some family? Is there a certain food you like to eat? What's your game plan here for Thursday?
Yeah, so over the past 4 years that I've been with my girlfriend, we alternate going to their parents or my parents. So this year we're at my parents' place, and basically at our place, I basically set the tradition where we just watch football as much as we can all day. So we get there at around noon, watch the first game. We watch all three games. And then my parents are wackos about Black Friday shopping. Typically, they go out. They go shopping Thursday night. And I always give them a hard time for it. But I don't think they're going to be doing that this year with all the COVID stuff going on. But, yeah, I'm pretty standard with the food. I'm not really a wide variety kind of guy when it comes to my food. But turkey, mashed potatoes, corn. I have this thing. It's really good. Anybody should try this out. Mashed potatoes, corn on top of the mashed potatoes, with gravy on top. So good.
Man, that sounds amazing. Jones, what about you, man? Like if you had to put turkey, you know, where would you price turkey on DraftKings or FanDuel? Right up at the top? Are you a turkey guy or what?
Oh, I remember these. I'm a turkey guy, but it depends on how you do it. I like deep fried turkey. If you've ever had a deep fried turkey, that's a good way to go. No, it's not going to be dry. It's going to be delicious. That's what we do. But my Thanksgiving tradition is just trying to stay awake until the last snap of the last game. Eating too much turkey and consuming too many adult beverages has me on tilt sometimes.
Fair enough. Okay, so for anybody who doesn't have the DFS package over at FTN, like I've been saying this in every single episode, you're really missing out. Unfortunately, your season-long leagues may be done. It's just the nature of the business. You got to head over to ftndaily.com/pricing, $74.99 right now, all-time low price. You're going to get all the content from absolutely everybody over at FTN. You're going to get David Jones's showdown content, and you're going to be doing some showdown stuff. Look for that over at FTN just before kickoff on Thursday, correct?
I do the video for the Mayo Media Network for the showdown slate, the Pittsburgh and Ravens game. Hopefully it happens. I mean, we're keeping an eye on it, but I'm still going to put that content out, and I'm hoping they force that game out. And then I'll also have my ownership projections, or my personal ownership projections, for the showdown slate on ftndaily.com.
And Kyle's ownership projections can be found, of course, on FTN. We had Kyle on the show last week breaking down some DFS. So hopefully you guys have head on over there and you've already subscribed. If you subscribe to this show, you're watching on YouTube, quick, hit the like button, leave a comment, a question, any kind of remark, we'll take it. Subscribe. And if you want in on the Jerry Jeudy mini signed helmet, giving that away, you can just screenshot that you've subscribed, send that over to meanstreetsftn@gmail.com. All right, with all that out of the way, let's get to the good stuff. Let's kind of roll through game by game. Kyle, you got your projections. You said you're going to tinker with them a little bit more before kickoff. You know, this to me is the most appealing game. Houston and Detroit, obviously it has the highest total. Deshaun Watson has been absolutely unbelievable, and he's checking out with a high ownership as well. What's your take on this Houston offense? And the last time we saw Detroit play, they scored 0 points.
Yeah, it is tough to have any kind of confidence in this Lions offense coming off of that brutal performance against another bad defense. Carolina is bottom 10 in pretty much any important defensive metric that you can look at, and Detroit couldn't do anything against them. Stafford was dealing with a thumb injury, so maybe, you know, a week to get healthy helps him out here. But again, it is a tough matchup on a three-game slate. Or sorry, a good matchup. And on a three-game slate, it is really tough to look away from this team here because of the spot that they're in. It is pretty unique because there's one game that looks to be fairly ugly and defensive kind of oriented with Pittsburgh and Baltimore, but this game is not going to be that. It's going to be a game which should have some scoring. Both defenses are not very good. I'm really liking really both sides of this game, and I'm trying to find ways to get contrarian or different within this game by finding some lower owned guys. I'm not really seeing a ton. You know, there's going to be some injuries. I just saw a report that Randall Cobb and Kenny Stills both stayed in Houston. They didn't make the trip to Detroit, so they're going to be out. So that could open up some Kiki QT type play, which is definitely interesting on a 3-game slate. Sometimes maybe it's not the cutest thing in the world, no pun on his last name, but it is something that's going to be fairly contrarian. And you don't necessarily need the salary on DraftKings because the pricing is just not stiff at all. But I have him at under 5% right now. Might go up a little bit with those two guys being announced out, but he's a guy that I'm looking at just to get contrarian. And then these injuries on the Detroit side, you have to monitor for sure. I mean, Galladay is going to be someone to monitor. Obviously, he would be probably one of the better plays on the slate, in my opinion, if you were to play, but it doesn't look like he's going to play. So that makes guys like Marvin Jones a better play. Danny Amendola is still banged up. And then TJ Hockenson. TJ Hockenson, again, one of my favorite plays of the slate. He was one of my favorite plays on the main slate last week, and now I like him again here in this one.
Jones, Watson has more rushing yards over the past couple of games than Duke Johnson. I mean, we can all laugh about Duke Johnson getting volume and opportunity, and there's something to be said about that in fantasy football for sure. Are you a Duke Johnson fan? Do you think that you'll have some exposure to him, or is this just like Watson in the offense, the passing attack?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be a Duke Johnson fan tomorrow. I'm not a traditional Duke Johnson fan. So if I'm looking at the Vegas props for this game, Duke Johnson has the best opportunity to get a touchdown to at least rush a touchdown in and get a touchdown for the Houston Texans at +105. And that's because he's going up against the Detroit Lions rush defense, who on the season are the worst, giving up the most touchdowns. And over the past 3 weeks, they're the worst. They're giving up 2 touchdowns a game over the past 3 weeks, 1.7 touchdowns a game for the season. So Duke Johnson, yes, he's looked bad. But it's been tougher matchups, kind of. This is the worst, so it's got to be a tougher matchup. I think he actually gets in the end zone. I don't know if the yardage is going to be there, but Houston's going to be scoring. So I like Duke Johnson. And a reason we've liked Duke Johnson in the past is because he can contribute to the passing game. He was the passing down back for whatever it was, 3 years, 4 years over with Houston. So if the Houston Texans are going to be without Stills again, they're going to have to rely on Kiki Kuti, who is technically the wide receiver five or six. You've got Stills out. They traded away Hopkins, and there's not much else to choose from there. I don't have much faith in Kuti, so it leads me more to really focus on the wide receivers, which we'll get to, Duke Johnson in the pass game, and then even some of the tight ends. You have 3 tight ends to choose from for the Houston Texans. So, yeah, I'm going to be on Duke Johnson. I think his price is good. The over-under in the game is the highest of any of the 3 games, 51.5. So, yeah, I'll probably have him on several of my lineups, probably my main too.
You know, Kyle mentioned, he kind of alluded to being contrarian. What's your strategy, Jones, when it comes to a 3-game slate like this? And maybe just we'll get to showdown and towards the end of it. But are you really focusing on just that one? Because it seems like for me, and any time that I've had success playing on this Thanksgiving slate, it's that one player that you can get and that could just break the slate for you. That, like Kyle talked about, QT maybe checking it at under 5% ownership. Is that your strategy too? You're just trying to find that one guy that, hey, if he can. Whatever, if it's 1 or 2 catches, fine. But if they can find the end zone, get some red zone targets, that can really separate yourself.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So what you don't want to do, people will try and get cute with every position, right? Because they're like, I got to win this GPP. I've got to get low owned on every single play. No, take the volume at most of the spots. And then when you're trying to fill in tight end or wide receiver, whatever the position is, just get weird on one little guy. And it can be someone that you like personally. The ownership's just not high. So last Thanksgiving, I actually won a ticket to the FanDuel Live Final in Puerto Rico on this day a year ago. And it was because I had Jason Witten at the tight end position and no one else had him. I went chalk on everybody because I loved everyone. Everyone's in a great spot. I went Witten at tight end for cheaper than I don't remember who the highest price guy was. But that's what did it at the end of the night, just getting a couple extra points from a cheap tight end. So build it chalky and then get weird on 1 or 2 guys, max. That's all you have to do. And it might be a good week to get weird on defense, actually.
I remember a few years ago, I had Anquan Boldin for the Lions. I think he had one catch and it was just a touchdown. I think it was an 8-yard grab. And that was the difference for me. I mean, I wasn't headed to Puerto Rico or anywhere nice to win some more money, but that's why we have you on the show. Kyle, you feel the same That's your strategy as well.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to stray away from the good plays because overall the public is going to be on the good plays. But also, I think there is a unique spot where recency bias can be something you can take advantage of here. So, for example, if Zeke wouldn't have had that big game last week, I think we could have potentially saw him at lower ownership. So looking for guys that are struggling and that is holding their ownership down, a couple of guys pop up in the late game where they're strong volume plays. Their roles are pretty significant, but they're going to be lower owned just because they've been struggling. And then guys in tough matchups, like that last game again, there's tough matchups there. But don't be afraid to target good players with good roles in tough matchups because, again, it's a three-game slate. You don't have a massive amount of choices here. So that's one thing I like to do on three-game slates is stack up as much as I can, try to stay correlated. That way, if one game or one team does well, a lot of those dominoes are going to fall within that lineup. And then don't be afraid to target some tough matchups with guys that, you know, have a good role and can easily, you know, touch the ball 10, 15, 20 times.
So we'll get to Steelers and Ravens in a little bit, but are you going to have the most exposure to this Houston-Detroit game? Or are you going to leave yourself like in the flex spot, just have, you know, somebody in there in case you want to make some pivots towards the end of the night?
Yeah, I think overall I am going to have the most exposure to this game just because of the fact that my two favorite quarterbacks are in this game. I like Watson and then Stafford's my second favorite. So that's going to obviously, with me trying to stack them up, going to lead to a lot of ownership in this game or exposure in this game for me. On a three-game slate, I'm probably going to be pairing my quarterback with two pass catchers in every lineup just because, you know, it makes sense with the limited amount of options and choices you have for receivers or tight ends or running backs. It makes sense to just pair them with your quarterback just to attach some fantasy points to that quarterback. So I'll probably just end up having a ton of exposure in this game alone just because of how much I like these two quarterbacks.
So if we don't get DeAndre Swift and we don't get Kenny Golladay, Jones, are you doing Marvin? Are you going Hawkinson? Because the tight end position is pretty weak. Andrew showed up last week, but you know, Ebron's been scoring touchdowns here and there. Actually, you know what? It's not that bad, to be honest, when I'm looking at it. Schultz, Thomas, these are some of the tight ends I feel like we talk about every single week. There's just, you either spend up at the top or you just try to find some value here. But Hawkinson has been a guy Jones has been least involved in this offense. It seems like every single week. A couple weeks ago, he was kind of getting taken off the field for Jesse James, but he suffered that toe injury later on in the week, so he was a bit limited. But we know he ranks among the top of any player in football. Yep. In end zone targets, and that's huge from your tight end. If you can find the end zone, that's significant. So what's your take on this Detroit offense? Because like I said, they just didn't show us anything last week.
I mean, yeah, they're going to be able to move the ball, you would hopefully think, right? Going up against the Houston Texans. So it does sound like Kenny Golladay is more on the doubtful side. I'm holding out hope for DeAndre Swift. If anyone's heard anything about him being available, speak up. But I'm leaning more towards him getting on the field, which if he does, I would absolutely love DeAndre Swift. Is one of the best backs on the slate. You don't have a lot to choose from, but you at least know the volume's going there, and you don't have to worry about Kerryon Johnson and Adrian Peterson. So fingers crossed that he plays. But one of my favorite wide receivers on the slate, it's going to have to be Marvin Jones, especially if Galladay's out. Marvin Jones is awesome on Thanksgiving. Last year, touchdown on Thanksgiving. The year before, he didn't play. He got injured. 2 years or the 3 years ago, a year before that, he caught two touchdowns on Thanksgiving. I'm pretty sure I rostered him then, and it was awesome. And he's just going to get funneled the ball from Stafford. It's going to be him. It's going to be Hawkinson, hopefully Swift. And then, I mean, there's really not many people left for the Lions to throw to, especially if Amendola's out, right? Amendola, I think, might play, so you can go with him as well. But then you're choosing between Marv Hall and Agnew. I mean, you just got to go with the big volume guys on this slate. I mean, look, it's a nationally televised game. The quarterbacks are going to get the ball to their stars. To me, it's a lot like NBA in the playoffs. You just go to your stars. You don't have to get too cute. Throw the best guy on the field the ball. And to me, that would be Marvin Jones if Kenny Galladay's out. Going up against Vernon Hargroves, who's allowing 49% catch rate. And Marv Jones has four touchdowns in four of his last games combined. So zero last game, one the game before that, and two before that. So everything's leading me to a lot of Marvin Jones in my builds.
Marv seems to show up every year. No, just at least there's this 4 or 5 week stretch run where he shows up and he's one of the best wide receivers in football. Producer Rob just dropped a bomb on us mid show here that the Steelers and Ravens game is postponed.
Oh my God. No, so, Rob, take it back. Make some calls.
Rob,
figure it out.
You're killing me here.
That's a bummer.
So that's a huge bummer. Yeah. What's your initial thoughts, Kyle, on that?
Yeah, it kind of sucks because obviously the Thanksgiving Day experience, selfishly for me, is like those three island games. It's fun back to back to back games. So obviously this is something that is serious and they needed to postpone it. So I believe I read it's going to be postponed until Sunday. So it's going to make the main slate, I believe, a 2-game slate unless the NFL works out something wacky. I don't think they could move up a game to Thursday, but maybe DraftKings will throw a random game on that slate. I have no idea, but obviously a 2-game slate isn't quite as fun as a 3-game slate, but I still think even with these two games, it's still somewhat interesting. We've done this before with the Monday night wackiness. Week one, we had doubleheader Monday night, and then a couple weeks back, we had one where we had 2 games on Monday night, I believe, because of a COVID postponement. So we still have a 2-game slate, and we've done that before, and it's definitely interesting. And one thing about the Lions is Thanksgiving, this is their Super Bowl. I live in Detroit. I live in Michigan. I'm around the Detroit area. It is their Super Bowl. Nobody else. We don't really ever play for anything else. So that's all I have to say about the Lions.
See, I thought they were holding Kenny Golladay out for this game in particular. I thought, you know, when he returned to practice limited last week, I was like, okay. And then it was Wednesday, I think he returned to practice. And Thursday, he was on the sidelines. I'm like, yeah, he's just gearing up for Turkey Day. Jones, man, you know, I don't know if that means more turkey for you, more drinks. And you only have to stay up till around 9 Eastern now. Man, what's your thoughts on, you know, just potentially here a 2-game slate now?
Hey, no promises. Not sure I'm still going to make it, you know. I'm going to do my best. But you know what that means is that there's going to be a tie up top, you would think, in these big GPPs, which is fine. You can't do better than first. But it also means we've got to dig a little bit deeper now for these weirder plays. Like after I just shat all over like Amendola and Marv Hall and Agnew, then we might have to start looking at them closer. And I thought this before the slate, I was going to say it on the show. I think one of these tight ends from Houston is on the winning GPP. And now it just kind of condenses my ownership more. And it condenses everyone else's ownership more to get on the Houston tight ends. But we can talk about that next. I guess we got to talk on these Houston wide receivers too.
Fuller or Cooks, Kyle, or just both? I mean, I think both pretty strong plays.
Yeah, I think they both make for very good plays. I do like the price decrease that you get on Cooks, but again, there's no position player that is more than 7K on this slate on DraftKings. Terry McLaurin's top priced guy that's a non-quarterback, and he's 7K. So, and now we have a 2-game slate, so maybe there's a little bit less to work with, but there's just not really a lot to spend your money on. So, no elite type plays. So, I think you can easily play both. Straight up, I would take Fuller over Cooks, but man, Cooks has been heavily involved over the past, you know, month plus. So I really like both, but I guess I would slightly lean Fuller, but I do like the savings that you get off of Cooks.
Jones, I assume you're rocking the jersey. You are leaning Fuller.
Oh, you know it. I'm sleeping in it until the game's over. Will Fuller is going up against Desmond Trufant, 54% catch rate against Trufant. Trufant's bad. Trufant used to be a Atlanta Falcons. I watched him for years. They finally had to cut him loose. Will Fuller's going to absolutely eat. I think he's going to have a huge game. His receiving prop is 70 yards. It's plus 130 for him to catch one touchdowns, plus 700 for him to catch two touchdowns, plus 3,500 for him to catch three touchdowns. I think he's getting one. He's getting the plus 130. I might even bet the plus 700 for two touchdowns. He's going to absolutely eat. And then Cooks, too. I mean, you obviously have to have at least one of them on every team now because you're pairing him with Deshaun Watson, who we all love. And there's only two games. So you got to have one of them on each team. And I'm going to have a ton of both. Having them both is fine on the same team, especially with Watson. I don't think I'd play them both without Watson, though, but you're more than likely playing Watson.
Yeah, I'm seeing both catch props. I mean, plus 110, 5.5 for Cooks, 5.5 for Fuller, minus 110. But those are two very strong plays for sure. Kyle, you mentioned the Lions. You know, you're from Michigan. So if Swift doesn't suit up, now with the fact that there's only four running backs really to choose from. I mean, we could get into Pollard in a little bit and JD McKissick, of course, but last week looking at AP and looking at Kerryon really dominated the snaps. Overall in the season, AP's had, I think, double the usage inside the red zone. Neither guy did anything. At least Kerryon was targeted in the passing game. Is he coming to play at all now, knowing that that third game is postponed and potentially no Swift?
Yeah, on the Sunday show with David and Javi, David kind of put me on the spot, asked me about the running backs with Kerryon and AP. It's a tricky situation, but I said I was pretty confident that Kerryon was going to get mixed in pretty heavily based on a quote that the running backs coach had earlier in the week where they said Kerryon's as healthy as he's been in 2 years, and they wanted to get him mixed in. They would see how overall they would rotate in. Kerryon ended up playing 70% of the snaps. So, I mean, if you're going to get a running back on a two-game slate that's going to be playing 70% of the snaps, you got to have interest in him, right? And especially in a good matchup. So obviously it's going to be dictated on if DeAndre Swift suits up or not. I think if Swift suits up, I think you just play him. I think he's probably the best running back play on the slate, or at least one of them. But if he does sit again, Kerryon Johnson saw 5 targets last week. So that's something that you can kind of bank on in terms of just having a floor off of those receptions. But then one other guy I want to touch on that might be impacted because of the DeAndre Swift injury, even though he's a receiver, Jamal Agnew is used in like a tons of different ways. He was actually drafted as a cornerback, but they didn't ever really intend on playing him as a corner. They wanted him just as a kick returner because he was so electric returning kicks. So he's an extreme playmaker. So if we see both DeAndre Swift and Kenny Galladay play, Jamal Agnew could be that guy that's like the weird, who is this guy? He just scored a touchdown that most people haven't even heard of because he's played like 3 snaps combined over the last 2 years for the Lions. So I think Agnew could be that guy if Galladay and Swift are out. Maybe even if just Galladay's out, but he saw 6 targets last week, which is a career high for him. Now, keep in mind, over the last 3 weeks, he saw six targets combined. So all of his targets in the last 3 games came last week. So it is a very recent trend. So we don't have a lot of comfort with that. But Agnew's a guy that is somewhat interesting for me. And then if Swift sits, I would have a pretty good amount of interest in Kerryon Johnson. Don't know if you can necessarily count on that 70% snap share again, but I think you could at least count on 40 or 50 minimum.
I mean, this is the best running back matchup, right? I mean, the Texans allow so much on the ground. Most 20-yard plays, 40-yard plays, even if it is a Kerryon who, you know, I think Jones, I saw a tweet last week when I brought up the tune. It was like Kerryon just to let everybody down again. But, I mean, you know, he potentially could get the bulk of the work, just like Kyle alluded to. Do you feel the same way, Kerryon over AP if there's no Swift? And if there is Swift, we're locking him in. He's good to go.
If there is Swift, you're locking him in. Look, I'm a career Kerryon Johnson hater. Like, I just think this guy's bad.
Because he went to Auburn?
He's always been bad. I didn't even remember that, Kyle. I just watched the tape, okay? He never got it going. I mean, they had to pull in Swift, who's been great, Adrian Peterson, whatever. Kerryon Johnson's bad. But, yes, you would have to have some interest in him if Swift is out. If Swift is in, I'm probably not going to do it. I mean, Swift 6,500 on DraftKings, Kerryon 4,300. Swift's in, I'm probably not playing Peterson either. I'm probably just locking in Swift in like 100% of my lineups and hoping he doesn't, you know, get re-injured. He's out with a concussion. He's in concussion protocol. So it's not like a physical thing where he hurt his knee or his calf or something. So he should go out there and play the full time. But yes, Detroit 32nd against the run, Houston 31st against the run. So this is where you use the running backs. I mean, it doesn't get easier than that.
Yeah, and for Swift, the last time we saw him in week 10, he finally really dominated the snaps. It was a career high for him. 16 attempts, career high, and 21 opportunities. It seems like, Kyle, he gets about 5 targets every single game. There is one guy I just wanted to bring up before we move on from this game, because you guys, obviously, I mean, you both brought up Agnew. Quintez Cephas showed up in the first 2 games of the season. Maybe not completely showed up. Maybe that's like kind of false to say. I mean, he had 6 grabs, but he had 13 targets. And Kenny Galladay wasn't playing in those games, and he was targeted in the red zone. He's only played 41 and 51% of the snaps over the past couple of weeks. So is that, Kyle, getting too cute with, you know, a play? Or you really significantly like Agnew more? I guess I can't say that. You can't probably say that with confidence. I mean, both of these guys are just average players, but they're probably, both of them, going to get an opportunity this weekend or this Thursday.
I think I would lean Agnew because he played 50% of the snaps last week. Cephas played 30, but Agnew has a unique role where he's not a guy that's really going to line up out wide. He's more of a gadget type player. And while typically I don't like those kinds of players on a 2-game slate, now that it's 2-game slate, and a guy that, you know, he is pretty electric with the ball in his hands, I think he is fairly interesting. And now Cephas actually has some newfound competition for his snaps there with Mohamed Sanu. He was actually active last week. I didn't think he would play a ton, but he ended up playing 26% of the snaps. So he's going to be pretty much competing directly with Cephas for those snaps. While Agnew, because he does so many different things, they'll put him in the backfield. They'll put him in motion a ton. He doesn't really have someone that can compete for him with those snaps. So now the thing is, the Lions could just say, okay, we don't really want to do that this week. We don't want to do those gadget plays. We're just not really interested in it. Sorry, Jamal. And that could really screw up with his usage, his snap share, all that stuff. But Cephas is going to be competing with Sanu for those targets directly. So I'd probably just go to a guy like Marvin Hall, who I think is kind of going to be the big play threat for the Lions if Galladay's out. So I think my interest in them would, outside of Marvin Jones, if Galladay sits, it would go Marvin Hall, then Agnew, then maybe even just taking a shot on Sanu over Cephas, just because, okay, it's a vet. We want to see him find the end zone on Thanksgiving. Not a lot to go off of. They're both pretty much splitting the time. So I'd probably hope to avoid Cephas and Sanu if possible, and I would probably just stick with Marvin Hall and Jamal Agnew.
Jonesy, you mentioned the tight ends in Houston before we move on from this game. Is it – what's your take on the two? And I think, you know, Akins at 2.9 is very appealing.
Yeah, so when Akins is healthy, Fells takes a hit. Akins is only 200 more than Fells. And then you have Pharaoh Brown, who's actually been a little bit involved too at 2,500. I mean, he's gotten targeted at week 11, week 10, week 9. They're so cheap, and the matchups – decent enough against Detroit. It's not actually a place like you love to attack the tight end against Detroit. But like I mentioned earlier, Houston's going to need some playmakers on the field with Stills out and only having essentially two wide receivers I have in consideration in Cooks and Fuller. I think one of these guys is going to get in the end zone. If you go back and look, a tight end has a touchdown for the Houston Texans in about half of the games, just doing it by eye. And Atkins comes in and he's that guy for me. But look, it's also like hard to predict, right? If all of these guys are getting on the field, Atkins will have more time on the field, Fells after that, Pharaoh Brown after that, and they're all within $400 of each other. Atkins is first, but I want some Fells and a little touch of Pharaoh Brown too. So if I make one team I love and I'm like, who do I go with, Atkins or Fells? I'm just going to double that team up, play it twice, and put Fells in the tight end position where Atkins was. And I know that's somewhat hedging, but it's also a really smart thing to do. Like, I'm not going to sit here and act like I know exactly who's going to get the call when you're down at the end zone. It's probably Atkins, but it could easily be Darren Fells too. So those are the two guys you want to focus on and make two lineups with them. And I'm more confident about the Houston tight ends now with the Baltimore and Pittsburgh game getting taken off the slate.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. That's why I feel like they both kind of come into play here with no Andrews and no Ebron. So yeah, that's a big bummer, man. I'm bummed about that game for sure. Washington and Dallas, let's move over there, Kyle. You know, you said your favorite two quarterbacks were Watson and Stafford. I would imagine most people are going to be on both of these guys. Make the case for Dalton or Alex Smith. Which way do you lean there?
I think I lean Alex Smith. The match was better for Smith. And over the past 3 weeks, the Washington offense has kind of shifted into a more pass-heavy approach. Obviously, I think that is partially because of out of necessity. You know, they fell behind against Detroit like 21-0, and then they had to kind of steamroll back. So they've been throwing at about 65% of the time over the past 3 weeks. But they have an adjusted pass rate of almost 70% over that time as well. So Washington is looking to throw a little bit more than they were. So I think I would lean Smith a bit. But don't necessarily feel great about it. But I think the main reason why I would lean Smith is because I know who I want to pair him with. It would be Scary Terry McLaurin. But when you were talking about pairing someone with Andy Dalton, you know, it gets a little bit more, gets a little bit messier with those three receivers plus maybe a tight end or Zeke. So it gets a little bit more murky with Andy Dalton over there. So I really like Alex Smith pairing him with J.D. McKissic and Terry McLaurin. Over the past 3 weeks, fun fact, only two guys have more targets than J.D. McKissic, and that is Deontay Johnson and Keenan Allen. Then J.D. McKissic is third. He has more targets than guys like Davante Adams, Alvin Kamara. So it's a massive number. I think he has over 35 targets over the past 3 weeks for J.D. McKissic. So it is wild. It didn't really seem like it was something that was going to be consistent, but it has been. And I think he's 5,100 on this slate. I don't typically like him because it doesn't really feel like he carries a massive ceiling. Like he's never – I know he scored against Detroit, but he's never really going to be a guy you can count on to fall in the end zone because Gibson has been the guy and also been so good down there by the goal line. But on a two-game slate now, maybe a guy that's 5,100 that's going to have 8, 9, 10 targets, someone that I definitely have interest in.
That is a fun fact. J.D. McKissic getting all those targets. Indeed, the last time these guys played, week 7, Dalton suffered the concussion early. He left the game. Looked like Washington was really just all over him. And I know, you know, Jones, you mentioned defense. We can touch on Washington and the defenses in a little bit. But in that game, it was Gibson who had a lot of, you know, play on the ground. And Washington's a tough team to predict. I mean, if you think that they're going to be down, you're going to get that J.D. McKissic usage. But if it's a game that they can control, like they did in week 7 when they played Dallas, it was Gibson, and Gibson coming off that big game. Are you leaning, Jones, Smith and McLaurin. I love that stack. The problem with Alex Smith is he doesn't throw a lot of touchdowns, but it's there. The volume is there. Or would you rather go with a guy like Antonio Gibson?
Oh man, see, it's tough because for all the reasons you just said, right? I would probably lean Gibson because I want to play, I mean, Deshaun Watson in almost every lineup now. I just feel like that's, I don't like the term free square, but I mean, come on. I mean, we're going up against Matt Stafford. We're going up against Andy Dalton and we're going up against Alex Smith. That should be the way to go. But if you're looking at the Dallas defense, actually over the past 3 weeks, they've gotten significantly better against the run. So it has me a little hesitant about Gibson. More hesitant when those three games, less hesitant now, but over the past 3 weeks, they've only allowed one rushing touchdown. They've just made a lot of improvements there, but that's the same with the Washington defense. They've only allowed one rushing touchdown over the past 3 weeks. I might actually lean McKissick here just for that PPR upside on DraftKings and then play Gibson over on FanDuel. Hope he gets in the end zone. But look, I mean, you want running backs that are going to get all the volume, and we know where all the volume is going to go. It's going to be McKissick. It's going to be Zeke. It's going to be Gibson. So you just mix those guys in. And Elliott came on last week. He looks better now. Not a great matchup, but you got to take the guy who's just going to get a ton of volume and going to be involved in the passing game, hopefully more so than the past 3 weeks with Elliott. He seems like a obviously great play now too.
Yeah, with that game being postponed, I would agree. I would say Watson is like an automatic. I mean, I would imagine Kyle's ownership is going to check in pretty high. Is it fair to say Zeke is two?
Yeah, I already had Zeke as the chalky option on the slate even before those two games were – or that those two teams were off the slate. So I would assume we see Zeke come in around – in some contests, I think he'll come in around 70, 80%. So it's going to be a high number for Zeke. So I still think he's a fine play. I would have liked him a little bit more if he was a little bit more contrarian. He'd been struggling massively coming into last week and then had kind of a big week. So I think more people will be, you know, easier to jump on that train here. But the passing work really hasn't really been there for Zeke. That was the thing that I liked about Zeke all year, was that he was being targeted so heavily. He only has 5 targets over the last 3 weeks. Now, he's going to be the guy that carries, you know, he's going to take 70% of the team's carries, which is always interesting. And it's a 2-game slate now, so definitely some interest in Zeke. But at that high ownership, I don't know. I don't know if he's necessarily a must play. There are some other good running backs on this slate still. Even with that game off the slate, we have Gibson, Duke Johnson, DeAndre Swift. There you go. If you play 3 running backs, you can do it very easily without playing Zeke. And then you can also throw a wide receiver in the flex over there. Even on FanDuel, you can throw a wide receiver in the flex to be contrarian. You can find ways to build a nice lineup without Zeke. Like if I had to pick a running back this week, I would definitely take DeAndre Swift over Zeke, which feels weird to say because a month ago, or I guess 2 months ago when Dak was healthy, I would have looked crazy. But yeah, I think I would feel more comfortable playing Swift over Zeke this week.
I would agree with that too. I mean, just from the pure volume through the air, I think we can agree that Swift would be the better play. The first game that Zeke played with Andy Dalton, I mean, he had 10 targets, 8 catches, and they were down in the final drive last week against Minnesota, and he wasn't even getting any targets. So he came away with 2 catches on 11 yards. He has 5 grabs in his past 3 games. He's, I mean, 1 catch per game basically over his last 4 and hasn't topped 18 receiving yards. So that is a bit of a concern when you're rolling out Zeke. The volume is there, but you'd like him to get some work through the air. Pick a wideout from Dallas. Jones? I mean, who's the guy there that you would lean? Because Kyle's right. I mean, that's what's so tough about rolling out Dalton this offense. You just don't know which guy is going to get the work. I mean, they tried to get CeeDee involved last week with some end arounds, and he had that beautiful catch in the end zone. It seems like Gallup is that guy who could really break the slate, though.
I mean, he could
just 0 or a 20, right?
I mean, I don't know what happened to this guy, man. I drafted him coming into the season. I guess CeeDee Lamb happened to him, and then Dak went down. That happened to him. But if I have to pick a guy, I think I'm going to go with Amari Cooper. I mean, he should be seeing Ronald Darby more. The FTN matchup, cornerback wide receiver matchup tool, has him and Lamb ranked right next to each other. Lamb's going to see more Jimmy Moreland. But Cooper at home is also a thing. Cooper bad on the road, Cooper good at home. He's going to be that long play threat as well. Can CeeDee Lamb as well? Can Michael Gallup? But I'm having to flip a coin here. I think I'm going to go with Amari Cooper over Lamb, but that's not to say that I don't like Lamb. Who do you like, Kyle, out of those two? I'm curious.
It's really tough. CeeDee Lamb's playing less snaps. He played 66% of the snaps compared to Gallup, who played 86 last week, and Amari Cooper actually played 82. So Gallup is actually leading those wide receivers in snaps played. I think a big issue for Gallup is a lot of his plays are coming on deep balls, and it's obviously tougher to convert those. He saw a 15%. He's seen a 15% target share over the course of the year, 18% over the last 3 weeks. So it hasn't really been like he's not being targeted. He has 12, while Dalton Schultz, CeeDee Lamb, and Amari Cooper all have 13 over the last 3 weeks. So it's not like he's just not being targeted. He's just not catching any of the targets, which I think was going to contribute to some of the deep balls that he gets. If I had to pick one, though, I think Cooper is the safe guy. But one thing about a shorter slate, you know, we have a two-game slate now, guys that maybe feel a bit overpriced, like CeeDee Lamb, you know, maybe only being 300 less than Amari Cooper, people could think that he feels a little bit expensive, so they won't play him. So those are some guys I'm interested in. So I think CeeDee Lamb would be my guy for tournaments, even though he's been playing the least amount of snaps. But when he's on the field, he's pretty heavily involved. So I do like CeeDee Lamb probably the most for tournaments. But I think Cooper is a safe one. But you're right. You're absolutely right on Gallup. He could really be that guy. It's a guy that he needs one catch to either break the slate or just provide a nice score for your lineup. So Gallup definitely makes some sense at just 3,500. Don't know if you necessarily need the salary on the slate, but again, this could be a slate where you're leaving some money on the table because there's only two games. So CeeDee Lamb probably my favorite one in tournaments, and I think Cooper is the safe choice.
I like that call, but leaving money on the table, because we're going to get some first-time listeners and viewers on this show playing DFS, and because I've already had a couple questions, like, get some of those DFS guys on. I want to learn about the game. Jones, two games, and you know, with your success, of course, in the showdown, it's fine to leave money off the table. I say that all the time. I mean, you don't need to upgrade for one guy just to get the $0 in your budget.
I literally never use my full salary. I haven't done it in 2 years on showdowns or on if it's a two game slate. I'm not going to use the whole salary because look, even if it wins, then you're splitting the pot with how many people are in these contests? Like 150,000. You're going to split the pot with 5,000 people. I mean, you're not going to make a lot of money doing that. If you're just trying to win $500, $800, something like that, it works. But if you're trying to win, you know, $20,000, you've got to get different with it. And I'll tell you what, too, these sites aren't priced perfect. Like, they don't know who's going to score the most points. So you're eliminating a high percentage of the field by not using your full salary, and you're getting better odds. So yeah, don't use your full salary. That's it's a bad thing to do.
Fair enough. I agree. I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, you never use it, so it's interesting. I agree. Back to Cooper and then Lamb for a second. Lamb's got four grabs in three straight games. I think Cooper really is the safest, but I'm interested in Gallup now that Baltimore Pittsburgh game is completely off the board at 3-5. I have some interest in him. I really do think that he could. Like, again, it's the big game or it's a dud, and it's mostly been a dud, as you alluded to earlier, Jones. I don't know what happened. Dak and CD certainly a big part of that. The Washington side, any love for the Sims boys, Kyle?
Man, these guys have been flipping back and forth. I think 1 week I played Steven Sims. I think it was his first week back. I was super confident in Steven Sims, and then Cam Sims went off. And I was like, yeah, it wasn't my fault. I just clicked the wrong person. I definitely wanted Cam Sims, right? But in all seriousness, it is tough because all these targets are going to McLaurin and they're going to McKissick. And then even Gibson and Logan Thomas are heavily involved. So there's the Sims brothers. They're not actually brothers, I don't think. And then, but you also have guys like Isaiah Wright and even Dontrell Inman that could factor in. And these guys are all just kind of eating at each other. So I think I would rather take my shot on some of the Lions guys or even Michael Gallup or Kiki QT in terms of looking for like a dart throw. But overall, I don't hate it. I guess if I had to pick one, I would still think I would lean Steven Sims. I think he's the best player out of the three. He was the highest in the depth chart coming into the year, got hurt and missed the good chunk of the first beginning of the year. But I think I'd have to pick Sims if I was forced to choose one of these four kind of secondary wide receivers for the Washington football team. But it's a tough choice between those guys. They are kind of eating at each other's opportunity.
It's certainly a dart throw. I mean, you look at it, Steve Sims is a guy that I liked heading into the season. There was a bit of a rapport down the stretch with Haskins. Of course, he's not the quarterback, but he seems like less likely to score a touchdown, even though last week he found the end zone and he scored a touchdown. I mean, he's not a huge body wide receiver, and he isn't really playing a ton of the snaps. And I go look at Cam Sims, and I see a big body there. I mean, he's 6'5". He can go up and get it, and he could potentially be a red zone target as well. Yeah. This is a guy who, I mean, he played 84% of the snaps last week, but he's not getting really a ton of targets, Jones. So is this just a dart throw that you're going to actually take a shot on, or is this just an immediate pass?
I mean, I'm not going to on my main team, on my qualifier team, where I'm going to try and win a big prize. But in my MME pools, which means mass multi-entry, then I will mix in a little bit of them. But I probably don't want more. Like, I would much rather prefer J.D. McKissic. And obviously, sure, Terry McLaurin is in an elite spot. So Dallas is allowing 2.7 passing touchdowns over the last three games, which is bad. Washington's allowing 1.7 for anyone who cares. But the problem is that you have Alex Smith throwing the ball who can't seem to get multiple touchdowns if he's going to get one. You know he's going to be aiming it at McLaurin. And the other guys just don't get enough targets. I know they're cheap, but, man, I still feel like you can go get the wide receiver one or two from any of these other teams, Houston, Detroit, with Marv Jones or – even Dallas over there, they're all better plays than you're going to have on that Washington wide receiver two or three. You don't really need the salary. You don't need to save salary because we lost the Pittsburgh and Baltimore game. So everything's kind of changing right now. I agree. I probably go Steve Sims first before Cam Sims, but it's another situation like I was talking about with the Houston Texans wide receivers, or tight ends. The worst thing you can do is sit there and pull your hair out, especially over these two guys with the same last name, about which one's going to go off. Like, you don't know. You're going to have to get lucky. Make a couple teams, swap out the Sims brothers, and hope one of them hits. That's the way to do it. Although it sounds like a cop out, if you're trying to win money, that's the way to do it.
No, I agree. I think it's a pretty good strategy. What are we doing at defense here now, Kyle? You know, the most expensive defense on the board now is Washington at 3.7 on DraftKings. We have Dallas 2.8, Houston 2.7, and then the Lions checking at 2.2, which, you know, on the full slate, I was kind of interested in them a little bit just to go the other way on Watson. But now I just, like we've been talking about, the strategy has changed. We don't really need to save all kinds of cash. But what's your thoughts on a defense this week?
Well, if the listeners thought that David Jones answer was a cop-out, wait till they hear this one, because this is a mega yes. cop-out. But the way I'm doing defense for this slate is I'm building my lineup first, and then whatever team I have the least amount of players on, I'm going to use that opponent in the defensive slot. Just so that way I'm not having guys, you know, I don't want to have three guys going against my defense. It's going to be almost impossible to have a defense that isn't going to have an opponent player in your lineup. So I'm just going with the one that I had the least amount of opponent players in, and I'll throw them in there because I don't think salary will matter all too much. Now the most expensive defense is off the slate. I guess in an ideal world, my favorite one would be Washington. They project probably the best for me, but I don't even mind Dallas if you wanted to just maybe try to capitalize on that Washington team passing more sack opportunities. But I think Washington would be the ideal one. But again, I'm just playing the one where the opponent has the least amount of players in my lineup.
Jones, what are you doing? We know Dalton struggles in primetime. We know that Washington can get some pressure on the quarterback. Dalton's, you know, he's known to throw a few picks.
I probably go Washington too. But I don't hate the Cowboys really in this one either. They've gotten better against the run, like I've said. I mean, I know that you can pass all over them. I read out the stat. They're allowing 2.7 passing touchdowns the past 3 weeks. But you also have Alex Smith over there, right? It's not beyond the realm of possibility that Alex Smith can throw a interception or turn it over some way or the other. And it's defense. It's very, very random. They're $2,800. Texans are 27. They're so terrible. The Lions are 22. They're even worse. So it's probably going to come from that Washington-Dallas game for me. Look, if I'm making a main team, it'll be Washington just because the defense has been actually good. If I'm trying to get a little bit weird, it'd probably be the Cowboys at home going against Alex Smith.
Kyle, I know you and Pat, you play the draft game, the snake. You have any choice, you know, pick first. Let's take Watson off the board here. If you had one choice, like say it was just us three or you and your buddies and you're playing a little side pool, you're not playing DraftKings or FanDuel and you're having your own little fantasy competition on Thanksgiving and you can pick any player first. Who's it? Who is it?
I think if you know that Swift is healthy, I think he's probably my guy, but if you're have to, you know, in a world where you have to work off of that, I think McLaurin would be the next best option for me. I think they're actually fairly close, and I think McLaurin or Swift would be the guys for me.
Jones, Fuller?
Well, so easy. So easy. I'm wearing the shirt.
Yeah.
Will Fuller, fellas.
Kind of easy.
Get ready for some money. I mean, he's going to go off. He's absolutely going to go off. One thing we didn't touch on that we should go back and touch on is the tight end situation for Washington and Dallas. I think we skipped over that.
Yes, let's do it. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, because I know we're going to get questions about like Logan Thomas and Dalton Schultz, who I think are both good plays too. So Logan Thomas has the most routes run per game for any tight end on the slate, and Dalton Schultz actually has the second most routes run for any tight end on the slate. So I probably lean Logan Thomas over there, even though I think Dalton Schultz is a pretty good tight end, especially coming in for the injured Blake Jarwin. We might have Blake Bell back for the Dallas side, so I want to keep an eye on that, but I still don't think he's going to eat into Dalton Schultz's production. So Dalton Schultz going up against Washington. Washington's ranked 24th against the tight end. The Dallas Cowboys are ranked 17th. That's not too big of a discrepancy for me to let it weigh heavily on my decisions. Still going to lean Logan Thomas because of the lack of passing options for Alex Smith. But Dalton Schultz would probably come in right behind him.
So Thomas has 5 games, at least 4 grabs. Andrews has 4 games with at least 4 grabs. I know he's not on the slate, but Schultz has 7 games, Kyle, with at least 4 grabs. He has shown up lately, no matter the quarterback. Who do you like there?
Yeah, this is a guy that a lot of FTN was on when Dak was healthy, and I guess when he got hurt, just the interest in that offense as a whole kind of dwindled. But yeah, I mentioned earlier that Dalton Schultz has the same amount of targets as Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb over the past 3 weeks. So the involvement is clearly still there. David alluded to the routes run stat. I love that stat for tight ends because you don't want a tight end that's blocking a ton. You want guys that are going to have opportunity to run routes and catch passes. And Logan Thomas and Dalton Schultz are the top 2 on this slate, but they're also in the top 5 over the last 3 weeks. They're both up there. So I really like those 2 guys there. Ebron was one of my favorite plays in the slate at tight end because I thought he was going to go lower owned. Obviously, he's off the slate, so I'm forced to, you know, pivot a little bit. And now I think Logan Thomas is going to be that guy for me. I really like Logan Thomas. I still think Houston and Detroit, that game's going to be the most popular one. So I think you can get some a little bit of lower ownership on Logan Thomas here. I think Hockenson will probably be the most popular tight end on the slate. And then Schultz will probably be the 3rd. I think Logan Thomas will actually be 2nd. So I don't mind Schultz or Logan Thomas, but I feel a little bit more confident in Logan Thomas. I feel like he's 3rd in the pecking order, maybe 4th in the pecking order for the ball in that offense. But when you're talking about Dalton Schultz, he could potentially fall down really quick if you include Zeke, maybe even Tony Pollard. So I think it gets a little bit more muddied over there. While Washington, they don't really have a ton of targets going around. It's more so just going to McLaurin, McKissick, and Thomas.
With this game postponed, I was adjusting some of my lineups here on the fly. It's complete shock. Like, there's no chance. Like, this, I feel like this lineup that I have on the go here with Watson and Gibson and Zeke and Fuller and Cooks, I got McLaurin in there. Like, it's all chalk. This is no good. It's garbage. I don't like it at all. Jones, you're a FanDuel guy. Is there one guy that stands out more so on FanDuel as you're looking here on DraftKings?
I mean, I'm doing it a little differently. Usually with like the full slates, you want 3 running backs. You want a running back in that flex position. It wins every week, except 1 week, 2 tight ends, 1. So, I mean, look, it's clearly Watson, but everyone knows that. If I'm looking at a running back, DeAndre Swift, probably. I mean, the matchup's too good. And then also, I also want to hammer in that I do like Duke Johnson a lot here too, going up against Detroit. So it's both of those backs really just out of that game. I mean, you don't have to get too weird. Like if you're trying to get too weird and you're not playing like a Swift or a Johnson or a Zeke or a Gibson in every lineup, and you're trying to go like 2 backup running backs, you're doing it wrong. If you're even playing 1 backup running back, you're probably doing it wrong too.
And so, Kyle, your weird let's get nuts play of Thanksgiving, I feel like it's Agnew.
I think it's, I don't want my name to be, tattooed on Jamal Agnew anywhere.
Dude, but we got to get nuts here. We got to get weird, man. We have to. Like, it's just the way it is.
I do think Agnew would be the guy for me. You know, like I mentioned, he's a guy who could literally, he's just a game plan guy. He could literally be just left out of the game plan, which is scary, not something that you want. But again, it's a guy that you're going to be after throwing a dart on. I think Marvin Hall, you know, Marvin Hall is only $900 more expensive. So I think he would be my more realistic one, especially if Galladay's out and especially if Amendola's out. But Agnew is a guy I just can't shake the thought of that maybe he finds the end zone here. Chris, I think I talked to you about this with Jakeem Grant a couple of weeks ago when I was in the podcast with you, and he ended up finding the end zone off of a reception. So I'm glad that worked out. But I mentioned that he has some upside off of punt returning and kick returning. Jamal Agnew does that for the Lions. Now, it's nothing that you ever want to really count on. But on a two-game slate, is it the worst thing to have in the back of your mind? Like, hey, this guy might take a kick to the house. I guess Tony Pollard has that similar kind of feel. They're not very likely, but I guess Agnew would be the guy that the crazy just throw something at the wall, hope it sticks. He'd be that play for me. But I was looking at some of these numbers over the last few weeks, and Cam Sims has actually been playing 84% of the snaps over the last 3 weeks. So he's at 84 last week. So I'm actually maybe liking that call a little bit more. I think I'm going to have to revert my answer. I think Steven Sims probably gets worked in as the year goes on more because he was coming off the injury. But Cam Sims, 84% of snaps over the last 3 weeks, he might be up there as well as a sneaky play.
Yeah, dude. 6'5", throw it up to him, Alex. Yeah.
Just I like it.
Give him a couple targets. Yeah, I don't know. He's trending up. But again, we're dart throwing here. We got to get a jersey, an Agnew jersey for you, Michigan boy. All right, Jones, who's your let's get nuts, weird, crazy play of the day?
I was going through everyone and looking, and one guy we didn't mention, this is not my play, but I'm just going to put his name in there so it's on the podcast, is CJ Procise. will be coming in after Duke Johnson, but I don't have too much faith in him. Look, my weird play is going to be Darren Fells, Houston Texans tight end going up against Detroit. People will lean more towards Atkins, who is probably the better play, but Darren Fells can still get it done. When Atkins was out, he was having a great season, and they're going to be down wide receivers. They're down David Johnson, obviously. So get him more involved in the pass game. Get him in the end zone. He's a big body that Deshaun likes to throw to down there. So give me Darren Fells versus Kyle's Agnew. I got Darren Fells outscoring Agnew this week.
Oh, like this show has been Agnew, Sims, Fells, CJ Procise. I absolutely love it.
Hey, if Agnew doesn't pan out, I can just blame it on the pandemic, because I wouldn't have touched that call if it weren't for the Baltimore game getting postponed.
That's fair enough. Yeah, super bummed again not to be able to talk Ravens and Steelers with you guys. And, you know, hopefully they figure it out. Everybody's safe there. Kind of rapid fire here on the way out, guys. Just some props. Cooks, I'll go to you first. Kyle, over or under 5.5 catches for Brandon Cooks?
I'll take the over on that. I like that. It's a high number, but I'll take it.
It is a high number. I don't have to go to you for Fuller. I know you're going to take the over 5.5 there. Duke Johnson, over or under 3.5 catches?
That one's tougher. I think I will probably – God, man, that's tough. That's right on it. I'll go over just to have some fun with it, but I wouldn't bet it personally. I think he can.
Yeah, you could say that. You could say stay away. Marvin Jones, over, under 4.5 grabs. That's plus 125, Kyle.
If Galladay is out, I would love that prop. I would love the over on that.
So McKissick is at 3.5 and Gibson's at 2.5 in terms of receptions. Do you have a strong feel on either, Jones?
McKissick over 3.5 sounds like, sounds great. Like Kyle
sounds
said,
too good to be true, right?
Yeah, like Kyle said earlier, I mean, he's what, third in the NFL in targets behind Keenan Allen and who else was it, Kyle?
Deontay Johnson, yeah.
Deontay Johnson. So yeah, I think he can get over 3.5.
Is 5.5 too high for McLaurin, Kyle?
No, I don't think at all. And I actually think that these lines are kind of indicative of the fact that they think that potentially Washington wins this game and kind of has that pace where they're able to run the ball more. I think that line would be a lot higher on McKissick and even McLaurin if they thought that Washington was going to be trailing. So maybe it's a sneaky little parlay play to bet the over on the McKissick receptions prop and bet the under on Gibson, because in a world where McKissick hits the over, Robbie Gibson's not going to be super involved in the passing game. So I don't mind that idea, because those guys really work against each other very, very hard. So I like the over on both McKissick and McLaurin.
For the Dallas guys, we kind of already talked about this, but just have some fun. Cooper's 4.5 at minus 115. Gallup is plus 130 at 3.5, his catch prop. And Lamb is 4.5 plus 100. Lamb's pretty interesting there, 4.5 plus 100, but Cooper's not a bad play. What's your thoughts, Jones, or maybe Schultz, 3.5 catches at minus 120?
Those are all a little high for me. If I'm picking one, I probably go Cooper. I feel like these Thanksgiving lines get kind of juiced up because everyone tries to bet on them that wouldn't typically be betting on stuff, and the public loves to take the over. So I highly doubt that Cooper and Gallup and Lamb and Schultz all hit the over. Half of them aren't going to. But if I have to pick one, it'd be Cooper going against Ronald Darby.
All right. Kyle, any final words, bud?
No, let's just hope that we get a Jamal Agnew touchdown. That's all I'm looking forward to.
Finishing strong. Jones, what about you, man? Any final words here? Piece of advice?
Yeah, I guess don't look for my content later on the Mayo Media Network because I have no more Snowdown to cover.
They get the day off now.
Yeah, and all the parlays. I have to redo all the parlays now and go over to FTM Bets and update everything because we're losing a game. But yeah, I don't know. I don't really have anything. Will Fuller is going to go absolutely nuts, and keep an eye on if Kenny Golladay somehow gets in the game.
So Fuller is going to be the one eating all the turkey legs at the end of the game.
Yeah, he's going to get the legs. He's going to get the breast. He's getting it all. He's going to get the stuffing out of it.
I'll take a good night. Fuller.
Yeah. Kyle, you're going to do all this again later this evening, 8:30 Eastern time, correct?
Yep, David and I will be back with Javi at 8:30 at FTNDaily.com. So come check that out. I'll bring the mashed potatoes with the corn and the gravy on top. We'll do it Wednesday night. We'll do a doubleheader.
I appreciate you guys doing this today. Give these guys a follow. K-Murr DFS, Tenacious D Jones on Twitter. Again, the NFL DFS package is only $74.99 the rest of the season, all the way up until the Super Bowl. The same thing, FTNBets.com. Thanks so much. Again, subscribe. Send that screenshot over to MeanStreetsFTN@gmail.com. Get yourself in that draw for a mini helmet signed by Jerry Jeudy himself. It's legit. Christine Oxford. It's going to come with the authentication. Jeez, maybe it isn't legit. All right. On that note, I'm out. Enjoy the turkey. Cheers, guys.